talk about blessings and blessings for the children, and tried to decide what I was supposed to talk about today, and then as the day went on yesterday, I settled in on this. I want to leave everybody on an uplifting note, okay? So when you see the blessings and cursings, don't center in on the cursings, center in on the blessings. Because let's be honest, that's what everybody wants, right? But we can't forget we all have kids and others that we love and pray for. Many of them are in the church or used to be in the church or know about God's ways and His instructions. And we don't want them to suffer from making choices that violate God's laws. Because that's really what it comes down to. You either obey Him or you disobey Him. Because of the practices of the world, many people that we know and love are in direct contradiction with what the Bible says, and as a result, they're reaping a curse. I know that every time things aren't going good for me, I need to examine myself because we bring it down on ourselves. It's something that we've done, whether in ignorance or on purpose or a lot of times people are, and this brought up, I didn't coin this phrase, there was a guy named Kent Hovind, but you know what the Bible calls willingly ignorant, okay? First time I heard him say this, I said, yeah, that's it. Now everybody could figure out, willingly ignorant, okay, self-explanatory, but he says, dumb on purpose, okay? Then it was clear to me, okay, there are some things we choose to be dumb on purpose. Either by saying, I don't want to look at that, I don't want to do that, I don't want to study that, I don't want to change that, or whatever it is. But everything, no matter how small, to dietary laws, eating pork. You see people eating pork and shellfish and all this stuff every single day, and they just don't fall over dead while it's in their, you know, mouths just because they eat it. You know, things set in. Like, they violate God's laws, and there's automatic penalties, and disease sets in. I remember Dr. Andre telling me a long time ago that while he was going to a Sunday keeping, he was raised in the Brethren, and then he was going to a Sunday-keeping Presbyterian church, and they all eat pork and everything else, but his patients, he'd tell them not to eat those things because he understood, as the naturopathic doctor, he understood the negative impact that those things have on their bodies, and they're there to see him because they're sick. So without really, for biblical reasons, and he would need it himself because he knew about that, but for just pure health, physical reasons, he'd tell people not to eat it. And you tell somebody in East Tennessee that they got to give up fat back, and they don't even understand when you say, is there pork in these beans? No. What's that little piece of the meat? Oh, that's fat back. You know? They put it in everything. It's, I guess, as bad as Louisiana when you're going down there with shrimp and crawfish and all of that stuff. Pork is in everything. You can't get anything hardly without asking, checking. But back to what I wanted to talk about. Is there any place in the Bible that talks about blessings and cursings? What happens if we do one thing and what happens if we do another? Let's take a look at Deuteronomy chapter 11, verse 26. It says, behold, I set before you today a blessing and a curse. the blessing if you obey the commandments of the Lord your God, which I command you today, and the curse if you do not obey the commandments of the Lord your God, but turn aside from the way which I command you today to go after other gods which you have not known. Now, the vast majority of people don't understand that Satan has done a bang-up job of deceiving people on the earth. People that believe in God, that believe that Jesus is their Savior. He has and they really don't know it, because if they knew it, they wouldn't be deceived. Then they'd have to either switch, if they wouldn't change, to switch to be dumb on purpose or in open rebellion. They don't understand how Satan chips away at how we believe what the Bible says. The concept that Adam and Eve brought curses on us through sin, that is realized. Yeah, it's because Adam and Eve sinned, and we have sin in the world, and they're suffering because of sin. But the concept that sin is violating any of God's laws isn't practiced. And it's not practiced to some extent, even in the Sabbath-keeping churches. Now, here's where I got to give the disclaimer like I gave last time, I think. The views and thoughts of this presentation are not necessarily those of the sponsors. And I'm in the minority in some of the things I'm going to say, and I want people to know that. There are people probably in this room that aren't going to agree with everything I say, but that's okay. I'm going to do what I believe, and you guys are going to do what you believe. And if we have enough love for each other and compassion, we can overlook each other's shortcomings. You can say, well, he's kind of nuts, but, okay. It comes down to loving God and having enough respect. And I'm not going to chase somebody down and say, hey, don't you understand this? Here, I'll whack you over the head, and then I'll read it with you, That's not what Jesus did. It's not what I believe we're supposed to do. And quite frankly, I think it's God's problem. If I'm wrong, it's his problem to straighten me out. If somebody else is wrong, it's God's problem to straighten them out. We should always be ready to give an answer for the things we believe, and we do, but we're not the Torah police. Okay? So with that out of the way, we all know this verse. Anybody that's kept the Sabbath for any amount of time, it's one of the ones you memorize. 1 John 3:4. Most people memorize it, and I memorize it in Old King James, but I like also what the New King James says. It says, whoever commits sin also commits lawlessness, and sin is lawlessness. See, God defines what sin is. What's lawlessness? Breaking his laws. Now, when I grew up in the Seventh-day Adventist Church, sin was drinking and smoking and dancing and going to a movie and all, traditions, doctrines, dogma, whatever you want to call it, that was sin, that was wrong, that was forbidden. That's not what the Bible says. Sin is violating God's laws. Let me ask you a question. Which ones? All of them? Every single one?
The ones that apply to you.
Right. We should give that a good definition. See, all of the laws don't apply to anybody. We know that Jesus was without sin. But guess what? The laws for women didn't apply to him. Okay, so it was impossible for him to observe some of them. If you're a woman, the laws for men don't apply to you. It's impossible. If you're not a priest, there are specific laws for the priest. There's also specific laws if you live in the land itself. If you live in Jerusalem, even, it's different laws than you live outside of Jerusalem. So there's categories of laws. No, when people talk about the commandments, all the commandments don't apply to anyone. But they cover everyone. Okay? So, like Diane brought up and Mike brought up, all of the ones that apply to you, every single one, there's no exceptions. And most people can agree with that and say, yep, until it gets down to some specific ones.
Yeah.
All right? Which laws? Deuteronomy chapter 5:32, it says, "Therefore you shall be careful to do as the Lord your God has commanded you. You shall not turn aside to the right or to the left. You shall walk in all the ways which the Lord your God has commanded you, that you may live and that it may be well with you, and that you may prolong your days in the land which you shall go to possess." Okay? Verse 33, I'm going to read that part again. "You shall walk in some of the ways which the Lord your God has commanded." It must be in there. One of those. There has to be a translation out there that's what it says. Because sometimes it makes me go bonkers, crazy, Looney Tunes. Let me let you in on a secret that's not a secret. Now, depending on how you calculate a generation, you can come up with a different number. But a little over 87 generations ago, our great-great-great-great-grandfather Moses accepted a covenant with God that granted us either blessings or curses based off the choices that we make. It's up to us. See, every day you wake up and you make a choice. Are you going to allow Satan into your life and cause you to stumble, distract you? Or are you going to follow God? Unfortunately, the routine of a lot of people is you get up, you take care of some emergency needs in this little room about, 6 foot by 8 foot. And then you come out and you put your coffee pot on or whatever your routine is. And you sit down and you open up your newspaper, or now those things are going away. So you open up your tablet or your computer and you look at the news, or you turn the radio on or television on and you listen to the news while you're getting ready. And you let Satan have first crack at you before you ever get started in your day. My grandparents did something that I saw as a little kid that I didn't understand but I can't forget. First thing they did before they did any of that was they prayed. And then before my grandpa went to work, they'd stop right by the front door and they'd say a prayer again. That he'd get there safely, that God would direct him throughout the day, and that he would do things. And yeah, he watched the news. He watched it at 10 o'clock every single night on TV. But he made sure that God came first. And before all of Satan's, because once he walked out that door, Satan was out there just, and the demons, they were just waiting for him. But he made sure that God was there first and asked him to watch over him and my grandma while he was gone. So, what do we do? See, he set up a system, and depending on how you count them, and these are all tradition, I understand this, but there are 613 laws, or some 759, or, the way you divide them up and count them and decide whichever system that you choose or like. These are basically instructions on things to do and not to do. That there are promises that we're going to receive. The blessings and the curses are promises. They're absolutes. For example, and I'm not going to put it all up there because it would get too long. I'm going to try and not make it real long today. In Leviticus, but you can write it down if you want, or listen on the internet. It'll be up there. In Leviticus 26, verses 3 through 13, we're promised 22 blessings if we're obedient to God. 22 of them in those few verses. Leviticus 26, verses 3 through 13. Now, somebody really says, 22, really? Or you count and you... I got them printed out. I keep them in my Bible. If you keep reading in Leviticus 26, verses 14 through 46, there are 45 curses if you rebel against God. Then, in Leviticus 26, verses 40 through 46, we're promised that if we repent, God will hear us and restore us. So he says, he starts out the blessing, you know, I'm going to bless you, but if you don't, if you're bad, I'm going to curse you. But the reason for the curse is not punishment. Like, you know, hey, when I was bad, there was some curses. It was a little strap about 2.5-3 inches wide, and it had a metal buckle on one end of it, and that came off from around my father's waist, and depending on how bad I was, determined which end of the belt I got. That's not what God's doing. He's not like, he's going to open up a can of whoop butt, you know, because we've been naughty. He doesn't want to curse us. The only reason for the curses are some of us are thick-headed, hard-headed, and thick-necked, and stubborn, and rebellious. It's to get us to realize this ain't working for you. Now, I've taught this to my granddaughter because I've heard it say this recently to some people. When things are not doing so well, I heard her say it recently. She says, "How's that working out for you?" Okay, that's what the curses are there for. For us to realize things ain't going so good. Maybe we need to change something or do something different because it ain't working out that well. Today, almost all of us to some extent believe that there are laws that are no longer binding or somehow have been set aside, nailed to the cross, no longer needed, abolished, however, whatever terms you want to put on them. And that's okay if somebody thinks that. I don't. I'm a zealot. Okay? I actually believe some of the things, take it really literal. Here's one, John 14:15. If you love me, keep my commandments. I have met people that's not the motivation for them keeping God's commandments. They keep them, or try and keep them, but love is not the motivation. I've said this a lot of times, so some of you heard it, but let me tell you, those are the meanest people in the church. Those are the people that, new believers especially, we got to protect them from that kind of people. Okay? The Sabbath keepers are harsh. We could learn a few things from the Sunday keepers. Now, Sunday keepers have all kinds of problems too, but they don't worry about the law so much, so they got to put love as a bigger percentage of what they're doing. And love is a huge percentage of the Bible, but we could use a little bit more love and a little bit less like being some kind of Pharisee. Okay? That doesn't do away with the law. But if you love them, keep the commandments. Now, I'm not going to get into all of this. Herb did a good job talking about, you know, promises of the Messiah and the Old Testament and going through that. So if you missed that sermon, it's up on the internet. But who was he? You know, what commandments? What was he talking about? Which commandments can we ignore? That's like W.C. Fields, and most of you know the story. He's a devout atheist. On his deathbed, a friend walks in, and he's reading his Bible. And he asks him, he says, "You're shocked." He says, "What are you doing?" He says, "Looking for loopholes." He knew the end was close, and he was denied God all of his life, and he's looking for loopholes. I think sometimes, and I've been guilty of it, so I think maybe other people are too. When I see something I don't want to do or don't like to do, you don't think of it like that, but you say, let me look and see if I can find, I really don't want to have to do that. Let me look and see if I can find something else. We're looking for loopholes. Instead of looking for truth, looking for loopholes. Let's get real. I believe what it says in Matthew 5:17. It's been quoted here before. While we're here at this feast site, do not think that I come to destroy the law of the prophets. Well, there's people that think, okay, yeah, he didn't destroy the law of the prophets, just some of the law. Is that right? He says, I did not come to destroy but to fulfill. And we know what Sunday keepers do with that. You know, okay, they're all fulfilled, so therefore they're set aside or we don't have to worry about them. That's not what fulfill means. Going on, it says, for surely I say to you, till heaven and earth pass away, one jot or one tittle will by no means pass from the law till all is fulfilled. I'm going to come back and talk about this jot and this tittle. I got a visual on the next slide. Therefore, whoever breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches men so shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does and teaches them, he shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I say to you, unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven. J.W. talked about, you know, he looked up in the sky yesterday and heaven hadn't passed away and he was walking on the ground and it hadn't passed away. But what is this jot and this tittle? Because here's where I say, warning again, I'm in the minority on this, but what is the jot and the tittle? Now, I've heard a couple different things, but I found this, you know, up on the internet today. The jot and the tittle. The jot is the smallest letter, and almost everything agrees on this. It's a yod. It looks similar to like a comma. It's the smallest Hebrew letter that there is. An example is right there, that little comma, whatever. That's a yod. That's the smallest letter. So even you take a law, even the smallest letter in that law is not abolished, done away with, passed away. What about the tittle? Just as a jot or a tittle. Well, here's some Hebrew letters in modern, well, by modern, you know, block form Hebrew alphabet is a bet. And it's close looking, very similar. When I first started my Hebrew beginning course, I told you where the rabbi put me back in the beginner's course 3 years in a row because that's where I belonged. It took a while to see the difference in those two letters. They look very, very similar. Kalf, bait. There's a tittle, though. See the little difference on the end there? Just that little tittle. A cat is close to the hay. You got a little tittle. So it's little in this form of Hebrew, which is, you know, most of it, if you're going to look at in any anything that's got Hebrew printed forms, it's going to be this type of Hebrew. The resh and the dalet, it's... Yeah, the dalet's got the tittle. It's right here at the end of it, top right-hand corner. But, you know, this is probably the hardest one to tell the difference between a dalet and a resh. They're different letters, 22 Hebrew letters, and then five final forms of the letters. But even the letters can be similar, but it's these little tittles. So now, having shown you this, if not even that little tiny bit, and another source years ago I saw it, there's some in a Torah scroll, there's some like, one way to example, if you've ever seen the calligraphy where, you know, you got the fancy letters and things that are added to it, that could be the tittles. But either way, it's a very minor, 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 you get what I'm saying? Minor, minor, minor difference. Even that is not abolished. What do we do with whole laws? Seriously, I want to raise that question. What do we do with the old laws? Which law, according to 1 John 3:4, can we ignore? Because we say, don't apply to me. Now, we can do it to any of them to answer the question, but will you be pleasing in God's sight if you do it? Today, there are churches that allow gay marriage. LGBTQ, XYZ, whatever, fornication, adultery. And that's only the beginning of the sexual sins. And they're okay. I mean, there's whole denominations on that, Metropolitan Community Church, down to the Lutherans and the Methodists splitting up because of this coming in to their church and their congregations and dividing them and putting them in half. There is the Seventh-day Adventist Church. It's in Hawaii, but I believe, and there everybody goes there as gay, the whole church. But there are Sabbath churches that believe or tolerate or allow all kinds of other sexual sins, too. And these are just sexual sins, which should be kind of obvious for everybody, but there's many, many more sins besides the sexual sins. And they justify them by either, well, you got to love, it's love, it's acceptance, or we don't have to do that anymore because Jesus fulfilled that, or that's no longer necessary. And when we start down that path, and I know there's probably people that believe in this room that there were literally 6 days of creation and then the seventh day was the Sabbath, and there's people that believe in a gap theory that there was big, long periods of time. But when you start, see, that's like the very first Satan doesn't want you to get out of Genesis 1 before you've already said, well, literally that doesn't mean that, and it can mean something else. And, you know, it's quite, the bottom line is questioning God, questioning what the text actually says. And he'll use anything to trick us in any way that works, okay? But as a result of this, and not having respect for God's word, we got members that don't respect God or even their own parents. If you don't respect your parents, it's kind of hard to respect God because your parents you see and they're right there until they die. And then you have the memories of them. And kids leave in the church. This is a really big problem. This is one of the things I thought, well, maybe I should talk about. But that was too negative. I want to leave, and I promise you, I want to leave you pumped up and charged up and feeling good. But we can't just ignore the problems at the same time. This Generation X, some of them are adults now. 18% of Generation X attends church or has any kind of ongoing serious relationship with God. 18%, less than 1 in 5. They grew up in the churches, were a part of the churches, and then when they get out on their own, don't let the door hit them in the back. They're gone. We've got teenage promiscuity. It's a problem. We got out of wedlock pregnancies. It's a problem. These things are going to happen, but it's never okay to say, oh, this is okay. You know? I'm not saying go down and condemn somebody and beat them over, but you don't teach that it's acceptable. There are standards. We got couples of all ages choosing not to marry and shacking up. You know what? It's wrong. It's called fornication. It's wrong. And if one of them is married, it's adultery. Rampant divorce in the church. Actually, statistically, there's more people that are Christians that get divorced than just heathens. And you'd think it would be the opposite, but it's not. Adultery, bad. Church leaders. And we all know, even in the Sabbath-keeping churches, Most of us know about that. And it's tolerated. All Sabbath-keeping denominations. Now, not everybody has discovered, you know, like Jimmy Swaggart, who didn't keep the Sabbath, but, you know, big name where everybody would know it and that. But this goes on all over the place. It's a couple that grew up, that were Seventh-day Adventists up until when they started coming to church in Knoxville, and she told me about one of the churches that she had attended. The minister there had slept with at least 7 other women in the congregation. And he was still a minister, by the way. Go figure that one. Tolerance of all of these things that shouldn't be tolerated. How does God feel about those that refuse to obey Him? Let's get real. Not just some of these sins I ticked off, but any of the sins. We said all of His laws. How does He feel about somebody that in rebellion just won't do it? They've been looking for loopholes and they think they found one. It says, one who turns away his ear from hearing the law, even his prayer is an abomination. We all have to make a clear choice. And then that was Proverbs 28:9. In Deuteronomy 30:19, it says, I call heaven and earth as a witness against you that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore, choose life that both you and your descendants may live. God wants us to choose life. He wants us to receive blessings. He's begging us to choose life. But He leaves that choice to each one of us. Now you can, we've got to return, my opinions here, I'm going to list a few of them off. We've got to return to believing what the Bible says. We've got to stop watering down God's Word. We have to teach that God means what He says. There's a reason that He said it. He's the same yesterday, today, forever. He doesn't change. We got to stop compromising our beliefs to fit into the world. And there's a whole lot of reasons to compromise. Pressures. Job loss. Government coming after you. I think we're very close to a time where everybody is going to have to deal with this. And it's not going to be as simple as all your bosses do this or you're fired. That'll be an easy choice to make, even though it's a difficult situation that nobody wants to be in. We got to understand that when Jesus returns, He's coming for a pure bride, not a prostitute. I'm a zealot, like I said. I believe everything that He says. I believe every single commandment, statute, ordinance, judgment, and precept in God's law. And I believe that they're all valid today, 100% of them. Now, let me give you a little bit of explanation when I make that, but I'll say it again. I believe every single one of them is valid, including ones that most of the Sabbath keepers don't keep, like from eating fat burgers that violate Leviticus 3:17 and 7:23. That's not popular when I talk about that. Let's get real. That's not popular. Fat burgers. Read Leviticus 3:17 and 7:23. To the clothes that we wear, whoa, this one got me in trouble. This one actually really contributed, and Mike and Brenda were there at the time. People were furious about this when I said that mixing of fibers in clothing violates one of God's laws. Now, you can do it. No problem. Go eat some pork. Fry your stuff up in lard. You won't fall over dead. But they're just like the health laws. There are physical reasons that God gave clothing laws. Now, those are some of them. People don't even think about them. I told you, I'm in that case. I'm in a minority on this, but I believe it because He says it. You know, Deuteronomy 22:11, He says it. Also in Leviticus, there's a talks about clothing laws. But a few nights ago, Can't remember exactly when. We were discussing how in 2003, there were rumors that I was going to be having animal sacrifices at the Feast of Tabernacles right here on this property. And we were going to be sacrificing animals. And there are people in this room that were here that year. Because we were going to read, I had to look it up because I didn't know for sure when this came up, but it was 2003. It was the very first time we were going to read God's law. It says every 7 years, we're supposed to read his law at the Feast of Tabernacles. And the pattern is just like the week. You got 6 days to work and take care of your stuff, and the seventh day is the Sabbath, and it belongs to God. You got 6 years to have a Feast of Tabernacles and do it as long as it's biblical. Any way you want. We're going to have kids' classes. We're not going to have kids' classes. We're going to have activities. We're going to have Bible studies every night. You know, whatever, however you want them. 6 years in a row, but the seventh year, God says you do something different. You read his law. So that's what we decided we were going to do. And there's a long story. I'm not going to get into it. I got a call. I got to ask you. Because a man got a call from a man in Texas that used to be in David Smith's church but had left. And he said, Mark, are you really going to sacrifice the animals? First thing out of my mouth was, who said that? And as soon as I said it, I said, no, please don't tell me. Because I would be very angry with that person. I really don't want to know who it is. But there's a high level of ignorance on things like this. Do I believe that the sacrificial laws are still valid and enforced today? Yes. But if we were to actually go out and do it, we'd be violating so many things from Leviticus 17 verses 3 to 9, you know, that requires us to bring the sacrifice to the door of the tabernacle. How are we going to do that? There's no tabernacle. We're supposed to give it to the priest. How are we supposed to do that? There's no priesthood today. In other words, you don't violate one of God's laws or multiple. In this case, it would be multiple laws to keep this one about sacrificing. That system, that structure, that does not exist today. And I tried to explain it. You know, I explained that to the guy that called me and said, that's crazy. You know, whoever said this, they're just lying. But they were trying to discourage people from coming that year. And we had, I don't know, at least 150 or so that year. And there was two feast sites on this ground going on at the same time. And when it came time to read the law, half of them stood up and made a showing of it and walked out the door. And then carried on their feast site. Weren't back, wasn't at the kitchen, nothing. They had their feast site. And every time we had where we're going to read the law, they're out there on porches and singing and trying to appeal people and, you know, celebrating. But anyway, to get off of that, what about the sacrifices? Let me talk about that one. I made the statement, I believe that that law is still valid and in effect. Here's the reason why. See, I'm kind of simple, but I'm logical, too. That's why I was good at math when I was studying it. But if you ask any believer why they shouldn't, and you guys in Knoxville, I'm sorry, you've heard this over and over, but if you ask any believer why they don't deserve the lake of fire, why shouldn't you be chucked on Judgment Day in the lake of fire? Almost unanimously, every single one is going to tell you something. They'll say, and they will correctly point to Jesus and say, well, he paid the penalty for my sin. And they're correct. If they've repented, he has paid that penalty. You can have forgiveness. But what does that mean? See, that means that the law requiring blood for sin is still in existence, because if it wasn't, he would have not had to pay the penalty for me and you. Today, that law is still valid. The system to carry it out isn't there, but the law is still valid. And we all point it, but nobody sits there and kind of like breaks it and thinks it out and thinks logically, what does that mean? His sacrifice was for our sins. Absolutely. But does that do away with the law of sacrifices? Because if it did, or however you want to put it, well, he fulfilled it, so that it's still in force. That's my opinion. The law is valid today. And I think all of the laws are like that. There are several that we don't do today. But those laws are still valid. They're not abolished. Remember, this is the God that's the same. Yesterday, today, forever does not change. Oh yeah, do it now, then don't do it, and then do it again, or however people work. There's 22 laws requiring the death penalty if you violate them. 22. Now, everybody can name some of them. Murder, adultery. Every one of those 22 laws are still valid today. We don't go out and grab somebody and pick up some stones. Isn't that what Sunday keepers use against us when we talk about Sabbath and clean and unclean? Or are we going to start stoning all the homosexuals now? You just didn't go out and grab somebody and say, there's one! You chase them down and pick up some rocks and pummel them to death. It didn't work like that. There had to be eyewitnesses, a minimum of two or three eyewitnesses. There was a trial. The priests were the judges. There was procedures. You just didn't, I guess because people, and somebody brought this up, because it looks in Acts, that's what they did with Stephen. There he is. Let's just pick up the stones and stone him to death. That didn't go down like God says to do it, even though it was the religious leaders. That didn't happen the way God says to happen. We don't violate God's laws in any instance. Either by trying to carry them out or ignoring them. They're all valid, but it's impossible to physically do some of them today. That system does not exist today. God blesses us for obeying Him. And I put this in, everybody in Knoxville knows about this story, but there's a lot of people here, there's some people here I know do not know about it. God blesses us for obeying Him. And I want to give you, even though this happened, there's other blessings we could talk about. You know, I could tell you about like in 1989 in Fort Payne, Alabama. That came up recently at church. I hadn't talked about that for a long time, but I ended up in the emergency room because I was burnt. And they told me that I needed skin grafts. And I was in intense pain. And I prayed and God instantly took the pain away. And by the eighth day of the Feast of Tabernacles, I was swimming.
Wow.
And my skin was gone. It was like butter. It just smeared after I was burnt, and Mary had to scrape it every night and put on Silvadine salve and all kinds of miracles God has done. And everybody here, I'm sure, has some miracle that God did for them. But I want to talk about a big one. Taking away pain and healing you when they said, oh, by the way, you know, they told me I couldn't leave at the hospital. They're telling people now with COVID that, you know, they're locking them down and isolating them. They'll tell you you can't leave. Let me tell you what I did when they told me I couldn't leave because I needed the skin grafts and I had to stay there and get them. I said, number one, I don't have insurance. I can't pay any of this. And number two, you ain't big enough to keep me here. And so if you can't say the second one, get somebody that is and have them go in there and say, They're coming home with me today. But back to this. That's seemingly simple. But every August, around August 9th, usually the Sabbath is the closest to it, I talk about a group of Sabbath keepers in Hiroshima. There was and I don't know why the Seventh-day Adventists aren't screaming this from the rooftops. I've got copies of the article on this thumb drive if anybody wants them. But two different articles that they've published and written about it years back. But there's a Seventh-day Adventist church in Hiroshima. Now, we all know the two atomic bombs were dropped, one on Hiroshima and one in Nagasaki. The one in Nagasaki didn't have any Sabbath keepers there. Now, yes, they didn't keep, you know, holy days and some of the other things. They certainly didn't keep clothing laws, I'm sure. But Japan was not a Christian nation. So first, they were kind of weird. But second, the only Sabbath-keeping church that got a bomb dropped on it was in Hiroshima. But the Bible talks about a plague where our eyes can dissolve in their sockets and tongues are going to dissolve in their mouths. In other words, if there's any bones left, your flesh is gone before your bones hit the ground. In this instance, because this is from a picture from Hiroshima, there was somebody with a cane walking up those steps, and the bones didn't even hit the ground. They were instantly vaporized. And that's the shadow that's left from the atomic bomb that was dropped in Hiroshima. Up until 1945, people couldn't understand how this could take place. You know, this plague it talks about in the Bible, how that was even possible. After 1945, people could see it. I got a lot of pictures that I didn't put up today. But let me say this. 50 Sabbath keepers in Hiroshima. Many of them ground zero when the bomb hits. I'll give you two examples. The minister's son worked in a factory. Hundreds or possibly thousands of people in this factory. The bomb gets dropped. The explosion knocks him under a transfer line. And if anybody knows what a transfer line is, it's this long line of equipment and parts go down it. And so anyhow, it knocked him under. The wall, the roof comes down. The walls come in. He crawls out under the transfer line, gets to where the wall was and crawls out over the rubble and gets out of the building, and he is the only survivor in the entire factory. Now, to me, that's pretty phenomenal. His daughter is in a Protestant Christian school, which means supposedly all the teachers are supposed to be Christians. All of the students are Christians. There's over 50 kids in this school. I forget the exact number. I don't know if it's like 87 or... But she's the only one that keeps the Sabbath. Same thing happens. They're in assembly at the beginning of the day. The bomb goes off. She's standing in the gym next to one of the concrete support pillars. The whole building comes down and that support pillar protects her. She climbs up through the rubble, gets on the roof and slides down because the roof is almost ground level now, slides down off of the roof and gets away, and she's the only survivor in the entire school. Wow. Even amongst other Christians. And this went on. There's a husband and a wife. The wife is faithful. The wife goes to church every Sabbath, and the husband gives her a hard time every time it's Sabbath and it's time for her to go. The wife is thrown out of her house when the bomb goes off. Their house comes down on the husband and he's trapped. And she comes to him and the house is on fire and it's burning and she grabs his hand and he tells her, "I'm sorry. You were right. I'm sorry I gave you such a hard time." And he tells her, "You have to get away." And she doesn't want to leave because her husband is going to die. He's trapped. He can't get out. And he tells her that she has to leave and she has to survive and she should go and he'll meet her in heaven. Over and over and over, 50 out of 50, Now, even if you're a survivor, the radiation sickness and the poisoning and all of the disease, more people died of that in the end than the actual bomb itself. How many of them you think got sick and died or had zero? And we're talking stomach ground zero. Zero. They were doing everything they knew to do. That's my point. Yeah, a lot of things they didn't know, but everything they knew to do, they did it and were faithful. And God intervened and saved them. In Psalm 91, it tells us, starting in verse 1, "He who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadows of the Almighty. I will say to the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress. My God, in Him I will trust. Surely He shall deliver you from the snare of the fowler and from the perilous pestilence. He shall cover you with His feathers, and under His wings you shall take refuge. His truth shall be your shield and buckler. You shall not be afraid of the terror by night, nor of the arrows that fly by day." These are weapons of war, and you know, all of this is going on all around you. "Nor shall any pestilence that walks in darkness, nor of the destruction that lays waste at noonday." This is talking about a very big event, catastrophic event. Verse 7, "1,000 may fall at your side and 10,000 at your right hand, but it shall not come near you." He took an example of that in that there are people that are alive and protected them from a nuclear weapon. "Only with your eyes shall you look and see the reward of the wicked, because you have made the Lord, who is my refuge, even the Most High, your dwelling place. No evil shall befall you, nor shall any plague come near your dwelling. For He shall give His angels charge over you to keep you in all your ways." We're coming, I've said this and other people have talked about it, and we've talked about it on the porches and in the evenings and stuff. We're coming very close to a time where I think that God will once again perform miracles. Big miracles. Because if He doesn't, we're going to suffer catastrophically. And some of these things are miracles, I believe, from the government, where they're going to be targeting us. He's going to save His people. But it's coming down to blessings and cursings. Who obeys Him and not obeys Him. We have a choice. The choice is you can obey Him and receive His blessings. See, I think that if we don't have those blessings for some, it'll be instant death. We need His protection. We're going to have to make tremendous choices on who we obey. For those that don't know, I promise to make this short, but I want to give it as an example. Not to pat myself on the back, but I'm trying to tell you things that He does. And hopefully you can understand, well, if He can do that for that clown over there, maybe He can do something for me. I am a member of BLM. It stands for Babies, Lives, Matter. I don't care what the world says about it. I'm a member of BLM. There was a family a few years ago that just started coming to church in Knoxville. And shortly after they started coming, they discovered that their 13-year-old daughter was pregnant. Now, that's a tragedy all by itself. But in Tennessee, if you're 13, Mary and I went and talked to her, tried to get her to take a pregnancy test. She refused. But anyhow, Mom did the right thing. She called up a doctor and she said, "I think my daughter's pregnant. I want you to examine her and test her." So they took her to the doctor, and the doctor did, and she was pregnant. When you're 13 years old in Tennessee, it's a must report. So like child abuse, whatever. And I'm not saying even that's a bad law, because how do you know it's not dad? you know, or something bad. But anyhow, so the doctor reported it. The bottom line is I found out after that the doctor reported it, they came and snatched. There was four kids. They stole them all. DCS shows up and takes them all. And some of you know this story. I did a music video about it. I've only done one music video, and if hopefully it's my last one. I don't have to do it again. I didn't write or sing the song, but I put it all to, you know, it's up there. It's jonathanslaw.com. That's the website, and the music video is up there. But to get back to this, a lot of people are afraid, okay? One of the things that they were trying to do is because mom would not agree to the 13-year-old girl. Remember, they steal her. They got her in custody. They want to give her an abortion. Mom won't sign. Mom won't give permission. So the state, in their infinite wisdom, they decide they're going to give this girl an abortion. And so they hold a court hearing to get a judge to sign an order so that they can give her the abortion. So Mary and I and others, we show up outside the courthouse, and we're out there protesting about the evil. We won't even go into all of that. One of the things I did is I called up the judge's clerk and told her who I was and that I had a customer that had owned five radio stations right there in East Tennessee, and I was friends with another guy who owns another radio station. And if that judge finds that court order, he's got to get reelected. It's the Bible Belt, and we're going to blast it out that he has signed the order. He refused to sign the order. So then the DCS first comes out and says, tries to get mom to sign it again. No. Well, fine. We're going to go to the next county. I can't remember which. Granger County. We're going to go to Granger County. Did the same thing. Called up the Granger County Clerk of Court and told her the same thing to tell that judge. He refused to sign it. Well, they went ahead without a court order, and they gave her the abortion and killed the baby. And that's what the song come from and was about. But put up a website. Okay, now what are you going to do? People in the church in Knoxville are afraid, and I'm not saying they're just foolish or there's not, you know, it's making us an enemy of the state. But everybody is going to be an enemy of the state that obeys God very soon, okay? If you believe in God and you're doing what is right, and I didn't have as much to lose, what are they going to do to me? We held a rally outside the courthouse one time and invited the media, and we read the charges against the judge and the officials that were involved, found them guilty on the courthouse steps, and turned them over to God for sentencing. That kind of stuff makes them go berserk and crazy. But before the rally, I got a call asking me not to have it from the president of Right to Life in Tennessee, from Nashville, asking me not to do this. I won't tell you I'll tell you a watered-down version of what I told him. I told him absolutely we were going to do it, and that he was a hypocrite. And, you know, they were working on legislation that this could make, stir things up, and just don't cause trouble. You guys ain't there. You ain't supporting this. You should be out there front and center. But anyhow, if anybody knows the story of Rosa Parks, it wasn't this innocent little black woman that one day decided she was not going to sit in the back of the bus. She was trained, selected. I'm not a racist. And I don't know if he understood, but I knew somebody would understand. I told him, I said, you have just met the nigger that won't ride the back of the bus. And people said, you shouldn't have said that. That sounds so bad. He said, no, I said it for a specific reason. Somebody is going to know. Because that's what they thought Rosa Parks was that day that they were arrested her. Just another subhuman of some kind that has no rights, privileges, not a creature that God created that loves. But oh, did they get a surprise afterwards from what happened because of that. Last thing I'll talk about it is every time there's a hearing, every time there's something going on, I'm outside the courtroom in the hallway with a shirt on about kidnapping, DCS and kidnapping, and Jonathan's Law on a website and stuff. One time, the attorney for DCS is complaining that I'm out in the world, because these are all closed hearings. You can't get into them. They're sealed. They operate in secret like the Gestapo, the SS. So the bailiff comes out and tells me I need to come in to the courtroom. What's going on? Okay. So I put my suit coat on over my shirt that I had printed up, and I walk in there, and a friend of mine that's an attorney is there, and I don't see him, you know, giving any signs, motions. He's just sitting there quietly smiling. So I says, okay, this must be okay. So they get up there and raise your right hand, and we got to go through that rigmarole. You know, I won't swear an oath because of Matthew, what it says. Swear not an oath at all. And so we go through all of that, and you know, I told the judge, I says, listen, you just want me to testify under penalty of perjury. I says, I'll do that. If I lie, God knows I'm lying. I says, you wouldn't know necessarily. I could maybe fool you, but I'll testify under penalty of perjury. He says, well, that's acceptable to the court. And the DCS attorney's objecting, and he looks and he says, that's acceptable to the court. Because he wanted me up there too. And so first thing she starts in on me is, what's on your shirt? I says, a suit coat. No, underneath that suit coat. Why do you have that suit coat on? And I looked at the judge and I said, to cover up my shirt. Why are you covering your shirt? I says, for respect for the court. It doesn't hurt to kind of butter up the judge a little bit. And he smiled and he liked that. Even though not necessarily, but you know, people are worried. I'm going to skip out a line here. First, I said, we all have to make a choice of who we're going to obey, God or men. So I'll do that one. Acts 5:29. Peter and the other apostles answered and said, we ought to obey God rather than men. That shouldn't even be a question for anybody. Their lives were at stake by obeying God. Thrown in prison or even their lives taken from them, but they said they had to obey God. And let the chips fall where they may, but God comes first. That's not always easy. And people are scared. And I understand that. Then it tells us, and this is really what I want to talk about, Matthew 10:18 says, you shall be brought before governors and kings for my sake as a testimony to them and to the Gentiles. And when they deliver you up, do not worry about how or what you should speak. For it will be given to you in that hour what you should speak. People worry about what are they going to do? What are they going to say? And I'm not saying don't ever say if I'm in a situation where I got to choose between God or man, what do I do? Think about that. Decide now if you're going to choose God so that when that situation happens, you don't have to think about that. It's automatic. It's a knee-jerk type response. But God will intervene. And that's just not like filler material. He means it. There comes a time where some of us might be hauled in front of judges. Now, part of me, I got to admit, part of me, I was having fun, okay? And part of them, I was really angry because of what they had did. And that was the majority of it. But as long as you're mad, the only way out of all the anger which can consume you is to have a little fun. So I was having a little fun. I didn't just show up with a... We were out there praying in the hall, too, don't get me wrong. But I had this shirt on to kind of stick it in their eye for what they did. So anyhow, she gets down and I shorten it up. She's asking all these questions and I asked every question she answered, but not getting to the real. Finally, she says, what's on that shirt? And I said, it's a website. Well, what's this website about? And that was my opening. I said, that website tells the story about how the blood of an innocent baby is on your hands and a bunch of other lawyers in this courtroom. Objection, Your Honor! He says, you asked. There's no way you can think of things like that up in the... You know, this particular DCS attorney, she tried, they were going to throw me in jail. She tried to get a court order to order me to remove the website. And one of the things she said is she didn't want anybody from her church to know or to see it. And I said, what church do you go to? I'll make sure they know about it. I'll call your minister. They do things. How can a Christian do something like that? But anyhow, the bottom line for all of this, I'm almost done, from swearing an oath to anything else, people that probably a lot of people in this room, if they have to, they swear an oath. I'm saying, go back and look. It says not to do it. See, it's a little thing. It's small. But any law of any kind, there are things we can do today. We can't sacrifice animals and things like that, but there are things we can do today. You choose what you're going to put on your body. You choose what you're going to put in your mouth. You choose these things day in and day out. We're coming to a time where we're going to have to choose. And the results are going to be big. You're going to be able to fit in with society and be just fine. Or there can be physical repercussions for what the government wants to force down our necks. From injecting aborted babies into our bodies. There's a couple out there that the fetal cells are not actually in there. They just tested the aborted babies' cells. They just used them for the testing, so that makes it okay. Pfizer, Moderna. How do you think they tested these? Vaccines in general. You know how many of them have fetal tissue in there? Forget about the monkey pus, snake venom. I mean, thimerosal and formaldehyde and all of the other toxic poisons that are in there. We have to choose. Are you going to obey God? Or are you going to obey man? What are we going to do? You don't have to think ahead of time of what are you going to say, but think ahead of time of what you're going to choose. And when we make these choices, I think we're going to see a lot of miracles. Now, I'm not saying go out and ask for it. Go out and bring persecution and suffering down on your back. But it is time that we stop acting like a bunch of little scaredy cats and in the corner saying, oh, they're going to come get me. Do you know who your father is? Do you know what that means? When it comes down to you must choose whether it's your boss telling you you will show up this Sabbath or you're fired, or a customer saying, I need you now or I'm going to find somebody else, or anything in between, to what they're doing with your children, to the evil that's going out there in the world around us, we all have to make a choice. There's this thing coming called the mark of the beast. And up until the last year or so, I wondered how were they going to implement. I knew it was a computer system of some kind. I knew that because, you know, the Nazis had teamed up with IBM and they had a punch card system and they kept track of everybody with an old punch card. But that ain't going to work today. Okay? I showed Kathy, and anybody that's on the PC mail list, I put the patent up there. There is a U.S. patent that was issued on August 31st of this year, 2020. So little, you know, month and a half, 2 months ago, tomorrow, 2 months ago, about a tracking system that is included in the COVID-19 injections. And it communicates with everybody else that has a COVID-19 injection. And somebody that wants it, I downloaded it from the U.S. Patent Office. It's not somebody put something up on the internet or made a fake document. And these devices inside of the injection, they communicate with each other. It's for contact tracing. And oh, throughout the whole thing, they say that it's an anonymous tracing system. If it's anonymous, why do they have to keep track of how many people that you've been in contact? These communicate with each other, and then it talks about uploading, or is it upload or communicate? I can't remember. Upload either one to a computer. So you walk through the door at Walmart or whatever, and they got a scanner, and it reads you, and oh, you've been vaccinated, and here's all the other people you've come in contact with. And it uploads the information off of you. And if they go to the grocery store or somewhere else, it uploads the information from them. And they're doing this to determine who the super spreaders are. It's the purpose of it. Well, wait a minute. I thought the lie was you get vaccinated and you're protected. The super spreaders are the unvaccinated people. But it can't track the unvaccinated people. It only tracks the vaccinated people. That system that they have built for all of this, is the system that's going to keep track of the mark of the beast. I'm not saying the COVID vaccination is the mark of the beast. I don't believe it is. But that system that they have built to take care of this, and oh, now they've got something in you. I think they're going to limit it to COVID-19 vaccinations. It'll be anything that they can do to get a needle in your body to imprint this in you. And it will give them a score. And based on the score is whether you need additional vaccinations. It can read, symptoms or... But anyhow, based off of the score, even it's mentioned additional vaccinations. Super spreader about to happen here. Let's grab them and stick another needle in their body. And when everything is digital and everything can be read, that system that's keeping track of this can just turn you on and turn you off. Can you go to the grocery store and pay? And buy or sell? Like I said, not the vaccine itself, but the system that they're using, and they've got it created. And they didn't wait until August 31st to inject it, just that the patent was issued on the 31st. Are we going to obey God and God alone no matter what? That is the question. Now, some people I know, no matter what I say, it's scary. But do you think it was scary when the Egyptian army was after all of God's people? And you got this sea on one side and the army coming on the other? And it looks bad? There's one guy that says, stand back and see the salvation of the Lord and the water parts. Miracles. Things take place that have never been done before. God doesn't tell us to obey Him so that we can suffer and be put to death. Well, some people will be suffering. Some are going to do it. But I've got a theory on that. My theory is we're going to have to go through whatever it takes for us to receive salvation. If you don't have to learn, every time I suffer for biblical things, persecution, I learned something. Not fun. Like one of the things I learned early on is don't pray for patience. You know how God teaches you patience? Carol's laughing. You go through trials that will teach you patience. So now I just pray for the wisdom that God will show me and let me understand and know. And I'm not saying don't ever pray for patience. I just decided that the way He gives me patience, I don't like that experience. If there's any other way around it, give me that. Okay? I hope that I don't have to suffer, be put to death or anything like that. Some will. I hope that I get to, like it says in Psalms, I can hide myself in my dwelling until the terror passes. you know, and it. But even we gotta think those stories about Daniel in the lion's den and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Even if God doesn't save me, I'm still not gonna knuckle down and obey Satan. And because of that, every time since I made that decision a long time ago, that I realize that and I stand firm, he's protected me. Sometimes I'm sure he's protecting me from myself, but sometimes he has protected me. That little instance I gave you, there was a group of people that wanted me thrown in jail that day. Before that, they wanted me thrown in jail because I wouldn't take the website down. Well, the website's still up there. The last thing about it is sometimes the odds seem so astronomical it cannot happen. One thing I did a couple years back, it helps when you have your own email server. I created a list of every state representative and senator in the state of Tennessee. And I put them on an email list. I called it Jonathan's Law. And I would bombard them with emails, not every single day, but on a regular basis. The state, no matter what your views on abortion, the state should not be involved in abortion. This should be wrong. This should be forbidden. You know how many responses I got from all the emails I sent out? And Mary could just sometimes, when I was making that list, I was up to like 3 o'clock in the morning putting all of them on there. The hours, and I thought it was all for nothing until not too long ago. This year, zero. I got zero answers, zero responses. This year, towards the beginning of the year, they passed a law in Tennessee. They called it the heartbeat law. A lot of people know what that is. Well, Tennessee passed it also. In that law, they put a provision in it that DCS cannot petition a court and ask for a court order to perform an abortion on somebody in their custody. And they put it in that law.
Wow.
Here's my response. There were people that, for whatever political reasons or anything else, they never answered, but when it come time to pass the law, that was included in the law. The governor signed it. 4 hours later, Planned Parenthood and some abortion groups, they filed an appeal in Memphis and got a judge to put a stay on it. So it's the law and it's passed. They just can't implement it. But right now, the state of Tennessee is defending that law, where before they were killing babies, because this isn't the only one they've killed. Now they're defending the stopping of the murder with DCS, and it's turned around on there where they're actually fighting for it to stand, limiting DCS themselves. God answered that. Now, that family got destroyed, but God answered those prayers and that effort. And he will answer many, many other things. When it looks insurmountable, when it looks like there's no chance, that's when God steps in. That's when we will see miracles. That's when he will give us peace. That's when, like Abraham with Isaac, now I know you'll withhold nothing from me. All of those stories, all of those examples, don't go looking for a fight. But when one comes to your door, never give up and never back down.